Blog Talk Radio.
At Point University,
in West Point, I believe, Georgia. Are you there, Brittany?
Yes.
Well, welcome to the call.
Thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for volunteering. I'm just so glad to be able to continue to meet young people who inspire me, really, to continue to do what I do in inspiring other young people, because your gifts a lot of times are hidden, and I want more and more and more of the village and the children in the village to see what all is possible. So where did I get your school and your location correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what year student are you?
I am a sophomore. I'm straddling the sophomore fence. I guess I can say sophomore. Yeah.
Okay. So you're straddling the fence between sophomore and what?
And freshman.
Okay. So, but basically, this is your second year in college.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Now, you grew up in the foster care system from the time that you were 10?
Yes. I closed the case when I got to Georgia when I was 20. So.
Okay. Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan. I was born in Flint, Michigan, and raised in Port Huron, Michigan.
Oh, okay. That's information I wasn't aware of. So, at 10 years of age, you were probably in about fourth or fifth grade?
Yes. I was actually getting ready. It was the summer of 2003, August 23rd. It was like getting ready to go to sixth grade. It was one of the best new schools at the time. Everybody went there, and we were going to go there as well. And then foster care happened, and then I ended up out in the country. And I went to Yale Junior High. It was an all-white school. I mean, you know, so on top of being taken away and just being totally out of my element, I mean, just in a whole other environment. Oh, geez.
Wow, so that was a real difficult adjustment for you.
It was. I mean, my twin and I, we went. My mother has four girls and a boy, and all the girls were taken away, and we were split up. And my twin and I were together, and so we went through the whole foster care system together up until 13. But just the whole school experience was, it was horrific. All the way up to high school.
Wow. Now, how long did you remain in that first placement when you were entering sixth grade?
The first placement, I went in 2003, and then my mom, she earned her rights, her visits back. And then a year later, 2004, April 4th to be exact, her rights were terminated. So I went back twice, actually, got us and then lost us, same foster home, and then I went to another foster home. So that was two, then I went to three, then I went to four, and then I went to a group home in Detroit. And I went through a school in the group home, and then I ended up, I was eligible to go to public school. So by ninth grade, I was at a public school. So that experience, it wasn't too bad. I think I enjoyed my freshman year more than I did 10th, 11th, and 12th grade.
Wow. Actually, that was my high school experience, too. After 10th grade, I hated high school. But what kind of feelings did came up for you when it was time to start school in the fall?
There was a lot of excitement. You know, then there was,
a lot of embarrassment, you know, just not having, you know, parents. So it's like when certain events come up and you, they and the school, hey, what, can your parent do this? Can your mom or dad, you know, can they help out with this? And so when situations like that came up, it was pretty, it was hard because it's like, so do I tell them, hey, I'm in foster care. I don't have parents. I'm being taken care of, you know, by the state, you know, because it's like they didn't understand that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when you don't look a certain way, you know, and I still deal with that now, you know, I don't have what everybody else has. I don't look like what everybody else look like, you know, and it's like in, even in high school, if you didn't look a certain way, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not even going to look at you, you know, and I'm
not
even dealing with that in college.
Your personal appearance or your what you have materially, or how would you be more descriptive of that, not look like everyone?
Well, you know, just having, you know, the clothes, you know, just
okay.
The look, you know, the pretty look. You know, especially, you know, girls, you know,
oh.
If you don't carry yourself a certain way, you know, if you're not pretty, if you don't dress, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, just thought of that, being in style, in fashion, in mode, and with that subculture that's considered to be beautiful and in.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I said, so much more so about being a part of that subculture of being in the mode, in the style, being inside the group, just being accepted.
Exactly.
Okay. And, you know, that's interesting because a lot of the organizations that I see around who do a lot of the back-to-school things, they only do things for back-to-school and for Christmas. And sometimes I have issues because it's usually like one or two times a year that they'll do something, and it's usually about the outward appearance. And even though I know that's important, I tend to focus so much more on what's on the inside of a person. But I do know that one year one of our local department stores selected our organization to donate back-to-school items for a shopping spree. And it was really a wonderful experience, you know, for me to watch the looks on the faces of the young people, you know, children up through high school. But I think a lot of it has to do with what's on the inside as well. And you mentioned parent participation. That is a real big one that I find that inside really sets people aside. Now, did your foster parent take part in any of the expected parenting roles that were expected in the school or in the classroom?
It wasn't until when I moved back to Port Huron, Michigan from Detroit, which you'll find is very interesting. In the fifth grade, we had what was called DARE, and it's a program that teaches you about drugs and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, her name, Officer Brisby. This was fifth grade. And the summer of 2007, August 1st, to be exact, I moved in with her. I moved, so my DARE teacher that I knew way before foster care took me in when I was getting ready to go into the 10th grade. So I was there for 3 years, and her husband, they really took, you know, the parenting role serious.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were heavily involved in, you know, school events. You know, they encouraged me to get involved, and, you know, and it was really, I felt like, you know, I belonged there. There was a point where I wanted to be adopted, you know, by them. You know, it got to the point, you know, they started treating me like, you know, I was one of their, you know, kids. You know, so certain things, hey, if you get involved in this event at school, like, you're going to stay in it. Like, there's no quitting or, you know, getting, you know, just giving up. And that's one of the things, just growing up, you have that mindset, you know, hey, I can't do this anymore, or I'm tired of this, so I'm not going to do it. So one of the things, you know, I did learn, if you start it, you need to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the things I learned from them.
You had someone to support you, you had someone to push you, and you knew that it came from a place of hearing.
Yes.
Beautiful. And, you know, you said that that did not happen until 5 years later down the line. And unfortunately,
exactly.
Some young people never even get to experience that, but I'm grateful that you did get to even have that experience. That says a lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot. And that's one of the things that I want I call them villagers, the adults in the village, to get to understand what is needed and realize that not everybody has, you know, that they can assume what's going on. And you get to know the young people specifically. In any of the times that you were embarrassed about not having a parent come and be involved in the school night, but I'm thinking of things like open house or coming and, you know, parent day, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
did any teacher ever reach out to you to find out what your situation really was?
Wow. Yes. I was a junior in high school, and I took a year in digital media technology. And my teacher, Ms. Baraboo, I'll never forget her. She, and I just thought about her the other day, but she was one that was adopted. And, yes. And just to hear her, she, one, and I love her story, which it really inspired me and just motivated me, but her having been adopted at a young age, out of high school, I mean, she went on to just do all of these great things, like straight out of high school, had an internship for the Jay Leno show, you know, worked for all of these our popular TV people.
Mm-hmm.
She has the opportunity to work for them. I mean, she spent years out in California. So when I heard that story and then when she, you know, heard about mine, and it's like she began to speak life. And, you know, hey, Brett, you can do this. You can make it. You know, I mean, I because of her, I wanted to be, you know, a film producer. You know, I wanted to make movies just like her. You know, because she had gone through some of the things that I had experienced.
Okay.
But, yeah.
What did she do to make that initial connection with you? Because a lot of teachers and other adults may not have had the experience, but they don't really know how to make the connection. So, one, already she had one thing going for her already. She had the connection. She had the experience, and she had an understanding. But what did she do to reach out to you? How did she initiate that contact with you?
Just the one-on-one time that we spent, and just how she would, I guess, show favoritism, you know, when it came to certain situations. I mean, I got away, you know, with certain things that weren't allowed, that wasn't allowed in the school. And I guess she would, you know, if I came in, you know, to the class, and she would sense that something was wrong. I mean, I didn't have to say anything. She just knew. If I can say that, I mean, she knew what was wrong.
She had a sensitivity and sort of an intuition about what was going on with you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So being observant, I'm sure, had a lot to do with it. You know, a lot of times people will look at someone and say, you know, I don't know what this kid's problem is, but, you know, if they don't straighten up, they're going to fail, and they're not going to be such and such in life. And some people try to use that approach, I guess, as reverse psychology to encourage or motivate or push young people. And I'm told that some people might need that, but I would prefer to try the other way first.
Uh-huh.
What were some of the things that she would notice that when something was always just when something was wrong, were there other things in terms of your strip that she tuned into as well?
Well, everybody that knows me, they know me as this bubbly, always happy, you know, exciting Brit. So if I'm not my usual self, if I don't have that high energy, hey, something's wrong. Let's find out what's wrong with her. You know, I've always been like that, even, you know, through my foster care experience. I mean, I've always took a liking to people and built relationships. So I still do that now.
Say that again, one more time.
I'm sorry, I said, I mean, just the whole, everybody that knows me, they know the always happy, the exciting Brit. You know, so anytime they don't see that, hey, it's something wrong. Let's see what's going on. And I've always been like that, you know, even before foster care.
So how did you feel about school in general? Did you like school? Did you enjoy school? I know you said you enjoyed your freshman year more so than your sophomore and junior. I mean, your sophomore year more than your junior and senior. But even in elementary school or middle school, how would you be described as a student?
I got in trouble a lot for always talking. Elementary. I talked a lot in elementary.
So you've always just had a lot to say.
Yeah, even if I didn't have anything to say, but I had something to say. I think it wasn't until the end of my high school journey I was just ready to do something new. You know, I wanted to go to college. I wanted to experience, you know, the second phase. And I wanted to go to Central Michigan, one of the best colleges in Michigan for journalism. And then, you know, that was my plan. Hey, I was going to be this writer. I was going to do all of these things. And I ended up going to Michigan Christian College. And that experience, that's when I actually found God.
Okay.
And things just changed. It like literally just turned around. I mean, you know, so it's like, hey, foster care, I mean, it was starting to die, and I was ready to leave. Okay, Michigan, I've had enough of Michigan, and, you know, I'm just finding out all of these different things, you know, about myself, about purpose, about God. And I just felt like there was more, you know, so I kind of just blew my freshman year and sophomore year. I just blew it. You know, it's like, hey, I didn't know freedom. It was a lot of freedom, and I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know how to use my time, any of that, you know. But I guess I got tired of going to the state, you know, for certain things. Hey, if I have a problem, I'm going to call my caseworker and she's going to figure it out for me. If I need something, I'm going to call my caseworker. And it's like, you know, it's like having that mindset of being a foster kid. It's like, I just felt like, you know, I needed something different, and I came to Georgia. I wanted to go to school, and now, as we were talking earlier, this about, okay, now I'm 21, and just having to make those adult decisions.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh.
So you remained in the independent living program until you were 20.
I closed the case when I got to Georgia last summer. I closed my foster care case. So once I did that, everything else went with it. You know, funding for school and everything else. So
okay. Now, did you make that decision because your time was up, or did you make that decision because you were moving to another state, or what was your reason for having your case closed?
Well, because I felt like I didn't need them anymore. You know, it's like in Michigan, okay, you're in foster care. We want you to get on food stamps, and we want you to get a job through Michigan Works. And it was just like another way to just dig deeper into the welfare system. And when I got to Georgia, it really just opened my eyes, and I just felt like, hey, I can do it on my own, even though I know I can't do it on my own. But just the thought of it, yeah, I just had to, you know, release and just let it go, you know.
Wow.
But there are moments when I want to revert back to when I'm 10, because when certain things don't go my way, it's hard, but it's fun along the way.
Right. And what I hear you saying is that you no longer want it to be both literally and figuratively. You didn't want to be a dependent of the system anymore.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's what I'm hearing. But, you know, we all need support. And for the most part, you know, the system was your, quote-unquote, parent, even though it did not fulfill probably all of the nurturing and the emotional roles. You provided some support, you know, financially and some of the other probably material things. But at the same time, any of us throughout life, we need someone that we can go to that will have our back, and primarily for that emotional nurturing. And I'm also aware that, you know, you've had a lot of losses just even in the past year, I realized, too.
Yeah,
and I see how you've dealt with those and supported other people, while at the same time still being in school. So would you say that your role with in your peer group tends to be probably the caregiver or caretaker?
Say that one more time.
Would you say that your role with your peers tends to be one of a caretaker, a leader, and a caretaker?
I guess it would depend on the situation.
Okay. That's just my observation from what I, you know, seeing with your post. You know, you're the go-getter.
Uh-huh.
And it's just important to realize that you also are deserving of having that caring and support, and that life gets hard for all of us. And for some of us who are caretakers and caregivers, it's hard to find people who give in the same way that you give, but never deny your need. And so when we talk about even going back to, I guess, what stands out to me most when you're talking about being in elementary school, that first day of school and, you know, then wanting your parents to participate in certain things and not having those. And I think that probably perhaps impacted your life. Until you got with the family that really treated you as their child. Are they still in your life now?
Barely.
The family? Barely?
Because of me, because I don't communicate as well as I should. I need to do better.
Okay.
But, I mean, they are there if I need them. They're there.
Okay. So, and maintaining those relationships is really important. So like you go back and forth between being independent, dependent, and there's an in-between called interdependent. So I want you, that's our word for the month, okay? We're going to focus on being interdependent. Because we all need someone, and I know that your faith in God is very strong, and, you know, the reality is he's the only one that we can totally depend on, but he does place people in our lives to be there for us, to have our back. And it's okay.
It's so hard to, as I said earlier, to recognize that, okay, God will put people in our life to assist us. But, you know, it goes back to that, you know, being in foster care. And, you know, there's, and we, it's like we learn this this thing, hey, I don't need anybody. Like today I feel if I need something I won't say anything. It's like I'll just struggle instead of telling somebody, you know, about what I need. And I think that's something that every kid that goes through the system, they learn that skill. It's like a survival skill. Hey, just to save myself from being hurt and rejected, I just won't say anything.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other subject, but I can't help but to throw in a little scripture that says, we have not because we ask not. And that, you know, I'll just leave that at that, but I do know that in my faith believing that there is a God who wants to meet our needs, and it's okay for you to have those. We actually have, I'm going to pause just a little bit, we have another caller on the line, and I just want to check in and find out who that is and if they have anything they would like to contribute to the conversation. So if you're listening and I click you on, please don't not say anything. Just say, I'm just listening, or, you know, share with us. Now I've got to get back into the studio screen. I lost my spot. I have to go back. Here it is. It's coming up. And we'll see what our listener has to say. Hello, are you there? Someone calling from the 313 area code?
There's Detroit.
Do you have anything? Pardon me? Do you have anything you'd like to add or share? Or you can say, I'm just listening. I guess not. Okay. I'm trying to put them back on hold. I'm wondering, you know, through everything that you went through and elementary school, middle school, or junior high school, and high school. For one, what were your grades like? What type of grades did you have? that good, huh?
Okay, I don't remember elementary, but Lord, forgive me. So middle school, I was like the teacher's pet, okay?
Okay.
And I changed grades, including mine.
Uh-oh. So you got to be like, what do they call it, the teacher's aide, so you've got to have access to the grade book.
Yes, and it was on the computer. So I'm entering the grades and like, hey, these are my buddies. So I'm going to change their grades. Now,
let me reframe the question then. What were your earned grades that were given to you by your teachers?
Okay. Ninth grade. These are grades that I earned. You mind you, I was in a group home. You know, so it was a lot going on, but I made D's and F's.
Wow. Okay.
But by the grace of God, I still passed, and throughout the rest of high school, because my foster parents, they were police officers as well. Let me add that in. So I didn't have a choice. I had A's and B's, and I had to bring home a progress report every Friday, and it had to either say good or excellent. I couldn't have anything lower than that. I mean, and then, you know, then they were later, you know, promoted to detectives, so they even got more strict. But A's and B's. I don't think I had one C, 10th to 12th grade. So my GPA was like 1 point. I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, someone set a higher standard for you. Someone expected more from you.
Yes.
Was that difficult for you to earn higher grades? Or did you just need someone to? Okay.
It was, but after a while, I got tired of being on punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to accept it
and get used to it. And then, you know, oh, wow. We had our weekly, our monthly meetings with other foster kids called Voices of Youth Standing Strong. And it was a team of maybe 20 of us, and we got together and discussed different events. So, you know, I would go to these meetings. So, of course, you know, I sound different, you know, and what I was learning and just some of the things that I was taught, you know. So it was totally different from, you know, the other foster kids. It's like, I'm not getting the treatment that she's getting. You know, some of them, they would come and they would complain about their foster parents telling them certain things or doing certain things, you know. And, I mean, so I think I had it made those 3 years that I was there, even though I hated it because I wasn't allowed to do certain things, hang out and invite people over, stuff like that, because it was a safety issue with their jobs. You know,
okay.
But I appreciate it. I mean, I didn't do too much of anything. I mean, I was heavily involved in activities, you know, the dance team, you know, the color guard, after school programs. I mean, even things with the church, you know, they encouraged me to be involved, you know, in as much as I, you know, could. They even helped me go to Switzerland. They did a fundraiser for that, but I didn't go because I was afraid, you know, of planes. But just their support, you know, even allowing me to go, and them just being a part of, you know, the events. You know, even when prom came around, you know, how they were both there, you know, to assist me in that. I mean, it was like everything that I just dreamed of, you know, having two Christian parents, you know, I mean, it was, hey. And then I was the only foster kid there. So, I mean, I really enjoyed it. So all the attention was directed towards me.
Oh.
That's something I was not used to, something I had never had, you know. So I did learn to receive love from both parties. I know there were some things, you know, that happened, you know, before foster care. So, you know, just having them there, you know, there was they were just, you know, there for everything. You know, a huge court case, you know, that happened, you know, as a, you know, being molested at 9. So they were there through the whole process, you know. I mean, just them taking off work, you know, to be there for the emotional support as well as, you know, the mentally too. I really enjoyed it.
Wonderful. That's amazing. I have two questions that are not directly school related, but they're all a part of your story. One is, were you the only child in their home?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you go about meeting them? How did they go about becoming your foster parents?
Well, when I stated before, I knew my foster mom before foster care, back in fifth grade when I was 10. Mm-hmm. And then at 15, 16, I moved in with her. And it wasn't until when I left Detroit and moved back to Port Huron, I was staying with the minister. And, you know, she was just the sweetest person on the phone. And, you know, and she just turned into, oh, Jesus. She wasn't, you know, who I thought she was over the phone. And, you know, so I ended up leaving there, and I called Officer Brisby on the phone, you know, and she picked me up in her cop car. And I think I just begged her, you know, hey, can I live with you? I'll do this, I'll do that. So August 1st of 2007, I moved in with her, and she just became, and they didn't have to go through the classes because they had already knew me. So that was easy.
Okay, so they specifically went into care to, became foster care specifically for you.
Yes.
And that's what I call finding your own placement. And I
For some young people, it's unfortunate that they have identified a family that they wanted to be with and the
yes.
person has gone through. And I think we should probably do a whole program on that. You know, I found my own home, my own home finding plan. So, okay. Now, where was your sister, your twin, during your high
wow.
school years?
Oh, Ms. Evelyn. So when I left to go to Detroit to my group home, we were 13. I was still in the eighth grade. Bianca was adopted. Her and my now 15-year-old sister, they were adopted. We were all in the foster home together. The foster mom, we danced on her dance team at the church, and she heard that we went into foster care. So she got her license specifically for us to keep us together. And, you
mm-hmm.
know, because I you know, I just had a lot of problems. And she didn't, you know, she couldn't handle me anymore. So at 13, we were split up, and we have not been together mm-hmm. since.
You said you were a problem?
I mean, I had a lot of tantrums and, I mean, just anger. I mean, it was just so much going on. You know, this was the second time my mom had lost us. You know, we were on a home visit, and she had drugs on her person. And I went back and reported it. And that's a whole other story, too. But I reported it.
Mm-hmm.
Hated me as a result of that, you know. So, but
so for telling the truth, you got more rejection, and weren't not given an outlet to express your frustration and your anger and the confusion that all brought about for you.
Exactly.
And you were punished for even expressing that. Wow, amazing.
Mm-hmm. And as a result, I ended up getting, you know, put out of the home. And
wow.
you know, I said, if I can't go back to that house, I'll just go to a group home. You know, didn't know what I was doing when I said I'll go to a group home, because that brought on more, you know, problems emotionally as well.
So, out of the turmoil, it sounds like to me that one of the things that has contributed most to your pursuing your higher education and bringing your grades up and having dreams and goals was the one family who really pushed you. And even
yes.
though you didn't really like it at the moment, it sounds like it brought a degree of security and confidence for you.
It really did. I mean, by 10th grade, Bianca and I were going to the same high school, but we weren't living together, you know.
Uh-huh.
So just seeing me, you know, I mean, I was just, they contributed to a lot. I think, you know, because of them, I decided to go on, you know, to continue my education.
So you graduated from high school. Were you still with that family?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm imagine that graduation must have been a very proud day.
Yes. Bianca and I actually, we walked together. Even though she has a different name and last name, we were still able to walk down that aisle together as twins. That was like the highlight.
Okay,
yes.
Now you're going to make me cry.
And the front page of the newspaper.
Oh, my gosh. I'd love to see a copy of that. And it makes me, you know, brings tears to my eyes because I have a young lady, I'll call her my little poet. Actually, she's been on this program before. She also was a twin and had younger siblings that had been in the same home, and two of the younger siblings were adopted. She and her twin were separated, and they were in different counties, different cities, and
wow.
they each graduated from high school last year but weren't even able to attend one another's graduation, and I think I might have been more upset about it than they were. So that just
wow.
makes my heart glad. And it's another thing. Actually, I have another set of twins I've worked with. So I think we're going to do a program on twins, too. So if anyone is listening to this. Pardon me?
That'll be great. That'll be great. I mean, Bianca, you know, we went down the same road, but then when 18 came, we each chose the road less traveled, if I can say that.
Okay.
So we each, I mean, we both have our own distinctive stories. Like Bianca, she's the mother of two beautiful girls.
Twins?
Huh?
Are they twins?
You can say that. They're born in the same month, just 2 weeks apart. a year apart, I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. Now, when you just said two beautiful girls, I was just wondering if she might have had twins as well. Maybe thought twins might run in the family. Okay.
Oh, they do. Not us.
Where is she located now, and how close are you?
Oh, gosh. Okay. Ms. Evelyn, I'm in Georgia, and she is in Port Huron, Michigan.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So how often are you in contact?
We talk on the phone or on Facebook. Whenever
she doesn't
like it.
Okay. And I'll just share with our listening audience that Brittany and Bianca are identical twins. So when I selected the picture to use to promote the program, I was saying to myself, well, I hope I got the right one. But if I didn't, nobody would know the difference anyway besides Brittany herself.
Well, there are so many.
Wow.
And I'm like, wait a minute, is this me or Bianca? I mean, especially when we were younger. So it's like, we'll have this argument. No, that's me on the left. But if you look at our pictures, I'm always on the left side. Even in our baby pictures, I'm always on the left side.
Amazing, amazing. So you got through high school. You dealt with all of the challenges that came with that emotionally, academically, and everything that went along with that, and you entered college. You're now in your third year or second year of college. And what have been some of the challenges that you faced just even going to college? Because, as I say about adoption, just because you graduate, you turn 18, it doesn't mean it's the end and they live happily ever after. And one of my goals now having had the experience of some of my awesome young people who grew up in the foster care system going to college, I'm aware that there are some extenuating circumstances that still continue to be issues. And one of my goals is to do something about that in another program. But what has been the greatest challenge for you going away to college?
Oh, gosh. I think there are two, the homesickness and just the school itself, just having, learning how to manage your time and learning how to, the work. When you get the actual work, you know, I've always had a learning disability, a reading comprehension. So when I first got to college, I thought it was a joke. You know, I didn't do anything. I didn't read or anything until I got my first F and realized they were real. So, and I'm just being honest. I mean, to anybody that's listening to the call, that's going to college, I mean, enjoy yourself, have fun, but when it comes down to it, like, literally, you know, find a place, find somewhere to go and really just focus on the schoolwork. I mean, and pray. Prayer definitely, it works. I mean, but once you have to learn yourself, you know, okay, how do I learn? How do I study? Okay, how can I, you know, you can't do it all in chunks. Like, you have to literally take it step by step. I mean, because you will be
so overwhelmed, you know. But, I mean, as I say, after the first semester, I'm going to need you to have yourself together. But the work itself, just the time that you have to put in, you know, if you want those A's, you have to put in the time to get those A's. I mean, you can just do average work or do excellent work, you know, and get excellent grades.
And what I'm hearing you say is developing a pattern of discipline and being organized in your study time. Because I think for any young person, foster care or not, the first time being away from home and having all that freedom can be mind-blowing and great-blowing. I think most people have their issues during first quarter or first semester, you know.
Yes.
As I tell people, I ended up on the dean's list, but I was on the wrong one. But it is a time of learning. But at the same time, I think, you know, just learning just that discipline. And so that's really more the tools and how to approach it. What about emotionally? Did you feel that you emotionally have had more to deal with than the average student? While you're thinking about that, let me ask you this, and I'm asking this because of a personal experience that happened with one of my young people, and I'm assuming just by your activity on Facebook, do the people that you're in school with now know that you grew up in the foster care system?
No, not all, but the friend that I'm sitting with now does.
Okay, all right, because one of my young people never told anyone that she'd been a foster child and made, a different story as to why the parents weren't there. And I understand, you know, in her heart where that came from. In my heart, it broke my heart because I don't think anyone should have to cover up who they are because none of that experience had anything to do with, you know, who you are as a person. And so to not be able to be authentically yourself makes me very, you know, very sad. So that was the one question, that you're trying to hold up an image of self to avoid going to that deep, dark place. And the other question that I wanted to know was, during the summer between your freshman and sophomore year, I also had a young person who had an experience of becoming homeless because the dorms were closed during the summer and had no place to stay. So I'm wondering, how did the first summer work out for you after entering college?
I was all over Michigan. I mean, when holidays came, and I had a car at the time, so I would just pack myself in my car, and I would, for a few weeks, I would be in Detroit. You know, another few weeks, I would be in Pontiac. I would be in Flint. I would be all over. And there was something else that I got as a result of, you know, being in foster care, just the moving around. So when summer came, holidays came, I didn't have a place to go.
Okay. And that was comfortable for you?
No.
Okay.
Well, I lied. It was.
But it wouldn't have been your preference because it was a necessity for the most part.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
I said, but it wasn't totally comfortable for you because it was a necessity. You
yes.
made the best out of the situation to enjoy it, but that wouldn't have been your preference.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so you have just this optimistic attitude, and you just you go with it. You go with it. That for a lot of young people who do not have some of the resources, like having a car, are having different people that they can go and stay with, are having a lot of pride in not wanting to go. Yeah, that could be a difficult, very difficult time. But I hear you as being a very resourceful person. Is that an accurate assessment? Or did I lose you? I think I lost you. Well, we're narrowing down to our last 5 minutes of the call anyway. So I just want to say to those who are listening that if you can just really take note of the strategies that Ms. Brittany, here she is, she's back, has made in making her education and her personal development priorities in her life through learning things through trial and error, but most of all, having support and being resourceful. Yeah, we got you for a minute, so I know that you're back now. Brittany?
Yes.
Okay. You dropped for a minute. We're glad that you made it back. And I was just sharing with our audience how throughout all of the trials and the difficulties in your life, you managed to come through with the care and support and the boost from someone to let you know that it was possible and that you did have that ability in you. And as motivational Les Brown says, that you had greatness in you. So between that and finding yourself, your spiritual position in life, I think those are probably the most impactful things that happened in your life that had you to go and pursue your current goal of obtaining a degree. What is your major in?
I am a double major in biblical studies and preaching.
Wow. And that was influenced by?
That school that I was at, Michigan Christian College. I had such a spiritual experience. It's like I wasn't even there for the education. I mean, you know, at 18, God fully called me into the ministry, but I did a bunch of, hey, no, not me. I'm good, you know. So I did a lot of playing around, and as a result, went through some things, and it was, you know, last summer when God opened up the door for me to leave Michigan and come into Point University. I mean, gosh, just knowing where I'm supposed to be, doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I mean, I am in the best place possible, and I encourage anybody, you know, to just, you know, to form a relationship with God, you know, so that you will, you know, well, one, so he will begin to tell you about yourself and speak life to you. I mean, that's one of the things, you know, he did with me and one of the things he's still doing. I mean, just despite all of the things that I've gone through and to be here now at 21, I mean, sometimes I feel like I haven't done anything in my life, but then I look and I feel like I've made a lot of accomplishments, you know, as a result of growing up in foster care. You know, the statistics are high, you know, for foster kids. So to come up out of that struggle and that mindset as well, you know, and to be where I am, I mean, anybody that's going through foster care or that's been in the system, I mean, they could have, you know, so much more. I mean, but that comes with knowing God and knowing who you are, and I mean, I can go on about that.
Yeah.
And I think it wasn't until at Michigan Christian College where, you know, I was the journalism major, and then I just felt God calling me to the ministry, you know, just to help other young people. I mean, I love the youth. But yeah.
Amazing, amazing. Well, I am excited for you. I'm glad to have connected with you, and actually you reached out and encouraged me in a post. That's how we initially connected. And it's just so inspiring to hear your story, and I appreciate your sharing it. And when you started to talk about that calling, I was like, oh, yeah, I hear the preacher coming out. It's like everything else, you were sort of mild. But when you started talking about that experience and knowing your purpose and speaking life, that came with power. So I commend you. I congratulate you. I bless you. And I know that there are a lot more in store for you. And just to summarize this call that I would love for adults to walk away with is, number one, be sensitive. Find out something about the students that you're working with. Have a little one-on-one time. That's something I've always shared, even in doing in-service training, for teachers to have some one-on-one time with their students to get an idea of who they're really with, because who they are. Because I think when you see someone in a classroom, you see a different person when you see them face-to-face, one-on-one,
mm-hmm.
not in that,
yeah.
that pool of other students. The other thing that I hear is for to have higher standards. You know, thank God for, was it the Brixie? The family who took you in high school, who really set some high expectations and set some boundaries and set some goals for you. And that, I think, gave you the structure. And just for other people stepping in there and saying, this is what you can do, and then whoever introduced you, you know, to God, to your spiritual growth, everything that we input, it means a lot. So just don't give up on our young people. Continue to believe in them when they don't believe in themselves. And that's
mm-hmm.
my whole thing. We have to hold the dream and hold the vision for our young people, so they don't even know what a vision is, but hold it until they can catch it. And for our young people,
yes.
I would say just continue to move, keep, just stand steadfast and allow people to deposit into your life and know that not everybody is going to disappoint you. No matter how many disappointments you've had in life, no
yes.
matter how crazy things may have been, there's still something that you're here on earth to fulfill and that for you to receive. So just hang in there until you grasp it. So, Ms. Brittany, I am just so glad for you, and I'm looking forward to doing some more with you in the near future. And if I don't make it to Georgia or Michigan anytime soon, hopefully you'll make it to California. So that's
oh,
one thing I've never been to. Pardon me?
I have not been.
You have not been to California?
I have not.
Okay, well, who knows? You might make it one day. I've been to Georgia, but I've never been to Michigan. And actually, I have three close friends who are from there, two that are still living there, and a relative. So I guess I should get there at some point.
Yeah.
So for everyone listening, thank you. Continue to support the Vision Select Child Card and Hard Talk with Ms. E. Please leave us your comments. We also had a comment in the chat room from Dr. Cookie Humphrey, who is a former foster youth and author of the book All Cookies Aren't Sweet. She said, I am very proud of this young lady. She's an example of a strong survivor. Congrats. Congratulations, Ms. Brittany Turner. And that comes from Dr. Cookie Humphrey. So there are people out there, doctor. So
wow.
if you can take a look at the archives, you can hear her interview with us. And we're collaborating on a couple of projects. She is either in Virginia or New York. I get confused. So we're back east. and we've not met face-to-face, but we've been working together now for a little over a year on a project that I'm very excited about. And in this day and time in the Internet, there's nothing that we can't do. And there's nothing, no one that we really can't find who shares our dream and our vision.
Okay.
So to that, I'm grateful. So just know that you're surrounded by people who also have a dream and have a vision. And whatever way that you feel like you may not have a certain component, somebody does. And God knew it when he placed it in your heart. So any closing remarks from you?
What did you say?
I said, are there any closing remarks from you that you would like to share?
Be encouraged. I think you mentioned about the disappointments. You said everybody is not going to disappoint you. I can say this. My church in Atlanta, I mean,
which they still get on me. I'll be there for a year in September, but they still get on me because I sometimes revert back to the mindset, hey, family is here to support and love you. You don't have to go back, you know, to that young, you know, Brit, you know, that was hurting, you know, for so many years. But when somebody, you know, they come, you know, you will know when God places them as well. But don't be so quick to reject, you know, the love, the support, you know. I mean, I don't know how many times I've done that, though, but just give them a chance. I mean, hey, they've given us, you know, I don't know how many chances, but if we just continue to be encouraged, I mean, and do not give up, no matter
what.
Never
give up. Never give up. And you heard it from this Reverend Dr. Brittany Taylor. So thank you so much. We look forward to sharing with you again. And to everyone, drop us a line at heart@forchildheart.org or look us up on Facebook. I'm Miss Evelyn Speaks, the Heart Lady, and I look forward to hearing your responses and your support. And if you have a story that you'd like to share with us, please let us know. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And remember to do something special for a child's heart. Good night. God bless.
Heavenly Mother, crying, these children are dying at the hands of the other child. I know her heart is breaking, feel the earth is shaking, that rivers flow from the tears she cries. She cries.